What kind of podcast is this?
Bad Playstyle is a book club podcast.
For video games.
For video games. What am I supposed to say again? Welcome to season 3 of Bad Playstyle. This is our infinite spoiler warning. Skip ahead if you don't want to hear that Metroid is a girl. Or the Zelda's boy. There, how's that?
Yeah. We swears a lot. Mm-hmm. So if you don't like that,
you say bad words.
You can send corrections to
badplaystyle@gmail.com.
Matt, my name's Matt. Welcome to Bad Playstyle. These truly are the end days. It's the last days on Earth. We saw the dust come down from heaven today.
Yeah. It's real fucked up outside.
Who am I joined by? Who else is in this room?
Hey, I'm usually eats chapstick, known to some as Owen.
My name is not a shame man. Not quite a shame boy.
Not yet a shame
boy. Yeah, we're close enough. It's Canyon.
It's the other way around. It's not quite a shame boy, not yet a shame man.
Oh,
because she's a shame teenager.
Yeah, he got something on both sides.
Right,
I'm a shame tween.
You made a shampoo out of your shame name, shame boy.
Shame blue.
Yeah, it's just like a type of stir fry.
Hey, so welcome to our podcast.
You missed it. It's a shame blue.
Oh, I did miss it because I didn't care. Anyway, hey, what did we play this week, Owen?
We played Kentucky Route Zero.
Twin Peaks the game was really good.
What is Kentucky Route Zero?
Kentucky Route Zero is a magical realist existential dread simulator.
Mm-hmm. That's surprisingly succinct. Yeah. Good work.
You've had a lot of time to think about this.
I've been playing this game slowly over like a year, and like I think about it a lot.
Why do you think about the game a lot?
No, we'll get...
Because it stays with you.
It does.
Okay. It's haunting.
It resonates.
Yeah. I also played it at a very slow pace originally.
Okay.
So
you had a lot of time to percolate on the many, many ideas in here. Yeah. So I got 5 pages of notes.
Okay.
You played the game. So, But, hey, there's a thing we got to do before... There's a couple things we got to do before that.
The Doom agenda demands it.
Apparently nobody was stupid this week.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. We talked about how I was stupid.
Oh, right. Yeah, you are stupid.
I booted up Fallout 4!
Hey, at least you didn't buy Fallout 4.
Yeah, no, that was already done for me. Thanks, Past Keenan.
Yeah, that was a different stupid time.
No, so I remembered that I have the mod where it just spawns you in a random fucking place, and I don't have to do the main quest.
That's cool.
So, it spawned me in the very top right corner of the map, and if you spend any time in Fallout 4, you know what a fucking wasteland that place is.
Yeah.
There's literally nothing up there, and so my...
Well, nothing up there but Deathclaws.
Yeah, no, like, it's Super Murder Town. Even the ghouls!
Especially the ghouls. They're like the deadliest enemy in that game, because they're so fast.
So that entire, like, my entire first 6 levels on my character, who is a man with a switchblade who sneaks around, because I wanted to do a melee character...
So for just a moment, can we talk about why is it that every single Bethesda game, the beginning of the game, is the worst part of the game, and literally no thought was put into later, like anything? It's just the worst.
Because it doesn't matter, because everyone plays this game for 200 hours.
Right, but it's just like...
It's 0.5% of your play experience.
I just think, like, you could have put any thought into the new player experience in your bajillion years.
But that's game. Always last.
Yeah, it's just like the...
It's crunch time. Put in the quest.
Put in half the quest.
Yeah. So yeah, my character was skulking around trying to fucking kill robots and shit with a fucking knife that doesn't do any damage. And it made me play really, really smart for a long time, and it was actually interesting for a while. And now I'm kind of overpowered and it's fun that way.
Cool.
Yeah. That's it.
Alright.
Hooray.
That's what I played, by the way.
Mm. That's all?
I did both.
That's it and that's all?
That's pretty much it, because you told me I shouldn't talk about that other thing I play.
But you just did it. Okay.
Okay, you have a shame now to bring up.
Yeah, well, listeners, we have a new shame.
We just brought up a shame, and now I get a...
You get a new one.
No wonder I'm a shame-associated person.
So,
and you can't create another shame doing that one. We don't have time for this recursive bullshit.
So when I first picked up Battle Block Theater...
Yeah.
And I played that game with a friend.
Yeah.
And we had a really good time, and it was like super fun, but it was like just sort of like, like anything could be this fun.
Yeah. Right?
But then I played that game, I made two children play that game, because it's a two-player cooperative platformer with like weapons and stuff, and they started killing each other when they got frustrated and like couldn't figure out the puzzle.
Nice.
Because there's like friendly fire in that game, so like, you know, somebody would be like, I don't know how to do this jumping puzzle, so I'm just gonna shoot a bomb frog at you, and then they started laughing hysterically that they had killed each other and like respawned in the same spot, and I was like, oh, I get it, like, oh, I get why this is a feature now.
Psychological experiment.
Right. Exactly. It's wonderful. So I played a bunch of Battle Block Theater with children. That was fun. I tried The Elder Scrolls Online, because it was a free weekend last weekend. It felt surprisingly good to play, but then, so, like, the actual gameplay and, like, running around and fighting enemies was fun, but then all the MMO shit happened, like, in the menus, where it was like, buy currency, and this is all the DLCs you could buy, and buy pets, and here's how to get the new costumes that we dropped in the game, and, like, all that shit, and I was just
like... You were like, go away, I'm Elder Scrollsing.
No, it was, like, just instantly exhausted, right? I was just tired.
That's sad.
Immediately. And I was like, I don't feel like doing this anymore. Like, I was really into doing it, and then menus popped up and, tried to sell me stuff, and I was like, oh... I don't want to do this
No
anymore.
Game. I come here to get away from advertising.
How much time did you actually spend playing it?
Like a half hour.
Oh, wow.
No, it looks like about an hour. Okay. So, yeah, like an hour.
But they did it to themselves.
Right.
They could have kept playing.
But it was like, I did the intro area, and then it was like, sell.
Yeah, but also, if Matt's not buying any of that shit, they don't need him.
Yeah. So, I was gone.
Like, if Matt's literally playing the free weekend and is buying literally nothing.
Always be selling. I get it. Yeah.
And then I played a little bit of Hitman. Went over to Sapienza, you know, got myself to level 20.
That's a good map.
I think it's Owen's favorite map. We talked about this.
Yeah, I like that map.
There's a lot of stuff in that map.
There's a lot of stuff going on down there, and I found all the alligator inflatables.
Oh,
shot them. And there's still some stuff.
Is that like a map-specific thing?
Yeah, it's like an exploration goal that gives you some mastery points. So, yeah, it was fun. It was really hard is when you shoot the alligators, the people get mad at you.
Yeah.
They're like, you have a gun. You're supposed to have a gun here. What are you doing? So you have a gun.
Not like in a discreet place.
No.
They're like out in public.
Trivial things like shooting our inflatable animals.
Right.
Can you like throw stuff at them? Like if you throw a soup can, are people going to be cool about it?
I never tried that.
I can't throw soup cans in real life the way that man throws soup cans and not cause
I can't
alarm.
Throw a fucking fire extinguisher like 47 either.
No, but I'm saying, like, he throws soup cans and nobody's weird about it.
Yeah.
I can't do that in real life.
Yeah, like,
If I threw a soup can, everyone's looking at me.
So, like, here's the thing, though. Like, there's a difference between, like, throwing a soup can and everyone's looking at you and throwing a soup can and everyone's calling the cops. like, if I went into a Safeway, pulled a soup can off the shelf and hucked it like a baseball down the aisle... People might, like, make a deal about it, but, like, I'm not going to jail. Like, they're not going to clap me in irons. Like, but, like...
Safeway may call the cops, but you can definitely leave before the
cops
show up.
I can just walk out before
yeah.
the cops
it was like,
show up.
Bye.
Yeah.
I threw your soup. I'm out.
Yeah.
I win, Safeway.
Yeah. It's 0-1, Safeway 0.
Yeah. And then I played a little bit of Grim Dawn, which, like, scratched a little bit of Diablo itch.
Okay.
Like a loot, clicking
yeah,
and play.
Yeah, click a loot thing, yeah, but it had, like,
a clicky loot.
Your like, abilities in the ability tree, it's like, what's that Greek one?
Titan Quest.
It was, like, Titan Quest style, so, like, you could put as many points as you fucking wanted in your abilities.
Mm-hmm.
There was, like, an upper limit for each of them, right, it wasn't, like, D1 style. But, I put way too many points into this one where I just shoot a swarm of insects and it damages literally everything in the line and gives it a dot.
Yeah, that
so
sounds
just,
dope.
Like,
keep
just
putting points in it.
Do that and then leave and then everything's dead, like,
nice.
Pretty much immediately. Because it's, like, under the hood damage. Like, it was bleed damage, right? So, it was, like, way easy. But maybe it'll get harder later, because that's usually how Diablo games work.
Yeah, you're on normal, which is known as easy in those games.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what I played. Owen, what did you play?
I played two games. I played a ton of Pokemon Go. They had a big community weekend last weekend, and I got a very infuriating peripheral for my phone to play Pokemon with called a Pokemon Gacha. Or Yeah. Because it's Go Cha.
Yeah.
And it's like a Pokemon Go Plus, except you don't have to push the button, it just collects for you. And it's like the most fiddly fucking thing I've ever had in my life. I only figured out today that if my Bluetooth headphones are turned on, it won't pair with my phone.
Phones are like annoyingly binary about Bluetooth connections.
So it's only because this thing's like this weird GD little ginned up hacky device. Like, I can Bluetooth headphone with my Bluetooth speakers, with my Bluetooth this and my Bluetooth that. But this little super low power device is like very sensitive. Like,
now I want it all.
Yeah. Like, I was riding the bus home today, and, like, I couldn't get it to connect, and I couldn't get it to connect, and so I finally just turned off my podcast and turned off my headphones and tried it, and it connected just fine, but also sometimes it just won't show up on my phone, like, at all.
Yeah.
Anyway, but they had the community weekend where they had all the Eevees. I got a bunch of shiny Eevees and caught some good Pokemon.
All the Eevees.
Yeah. My girlfriend and I went and smashed a bunch of gyms together, hung out at the Locks all of Sunday, the Ballard Locks. I don't know if any of our listeners are from Seattle, but, like...
It's worth a Wikipedia look.
Yeah,
the pretty cool marvel of engineering.
The Hiram Chittenden blocks.
Yeah. It was built in, like, 1912.
Do you know they still have, like, brass fixtures down below?
Yeah. Like, and walked around Green Lake and stuff, and, like, that was cool, and then I played a fucking shitload of No Man's Sky, and that game's really good.
So, explain why No Man's Sky is good. Like, what do you find...
What's it doing for you, man?
Because it has enormous problems, and the game is still so good, I don't care about those problems.
Okay.
No,
The loop is so good,
It's just, like, it's the like mental sensation you get in your brain when you're looking at distant horizons and just like soaking it in, and you can just like do that, and it has like just like it's got this like,
is it scratching your Carl Sagan Explorer itch?
Kind of not quite.
No, okay.
It's like it's more than just that. It's like this like, it's this whole aesthetic that it just bathes in. Like, it has these really richly colored shaders.
It's definitely, like, scenery porn.
And it's got this, like fucking Vangelis chill-ass music.
When I came in today, Owen was playing it, and I was just like, there's so many colors, this is so cool.
Yeah.
That was the initial thing way back when I saw a trailer for it on a Ross's Game Dungeon video, where he's like, I don't keep up with games. Here are the 70 games I'm hyped for next year.
Sure. Shout out to Ross's Game Dungeon.
Right, yeah. Ross is pretty fucking cool.
You
have mold problems right now, anyway.
Yo, that's not good.
I was going to say something else.
But he's in Poland. You were talking about the visuals of No Man's Sky.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like the,
anyway,
you were talking about the feeling, like the mountain high you
get. Yeah, it's very good, though. Got like synthy Vangelis music that's just phenomenal too. Like, it's got like, it reminded me of some of the Stellaris soundtrack that I liked like a lot, but the gameplay meshes with the music in the way that Stellaris doesn't, because like Stellaris is like you just looking at menus of numbers and crap like that, like just an overview, whereas like this, like I was showing Keenan today, I found a planet, and the planet seems to be made of metal, and it's completely covered in hexagons.
Okay.
Everything is hexagons.
And there's, like, these glowing noodle trees, and they have hexagon leaves. And, like...
Like, dome hexagon leaves. But the visor tells you it's a plant.
Yeah, it's a plant. It's not
tells
like a machine.
Plant stuff about this plant.
I found a planet with an enormous stargate on it, like, big enough to, like, fly an airplane through. And, like, you can go interact with it, but it won't turn on. Like, I can't figure out what it is. I don't know, just kept moving. Just kept trucking through the galaxy. There's even, like, this, like, really bare... It's, like, when you actually look at it for what it is, there's this quest that's to give you something to do, the Atlas path, and it's not amazing, but every time you go to one of the locations for it, they have this, like, grandeur and fantasticness to them. You know, you go to these... like, almost like enormous temples in space, and go communicate with an enormous throbbing icosahedron, and...
That game does what a lot of space games don't, in that it makes you feel small.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I get from it when I see it, is, like, the scope of everything going on in that game actually creates the, you know, the vastness of space and the...
Living up to the title.
Right. Like, it's very...
Like, we don't own this. The same way we do on Earth.
It's very much like universe theme park kind of.
It's got this huge theme of loneliness in it. Like even when you go and talk to people, they talk like you're reading the logs of like other lone travelers.
Right, you're all out in the black together, but not.
Like, and like there is like sort of an overarching like story behind everything that like there's other people like you who are trying to figure out why the universe is like this. Like, why it's so empty, and why it's, you know, and why these people feel compelled to go travel from planet to planet. And, like, it really hammers that, like, that theme home. Anyway, so, like, fucking No Man's Sky is fantastic.
Which is, like, totally Owen's shit.
Yeah.
All of that.
Yeah. And there's, like, a ton of things that are busted up and weird about it, and it's, like, buggy, and does a really poor job of explaining some of its stuff, and has a lot of fiddly inventory stuff. But, like, all the stuff I just talked about, it hits me so good, I don't care that it's got this fiddly inventory. And sometimes I run into situations where I can't tell if it's a glitch that I can't progress in the quest, or that I have not been explained to at all what I'm expected to do next. And, like, that happens to me a fair bit, and I hate that in games, and, like, I don't even care. Like, it just rolls off me like water.
It seems like there's
duck.
So much other stuff to do that you can just walk away and come back and figure it out later, like, in a way that helps with that problem. Yeah.
Okay.
It's big.
Yeah. No Man's Sky is a fucking cool game.
At this point in the end of the world, this is where we talk about the Kentucky Route Zero, Acts 1 through 4.
Ayy.
If you don't want us to completely ruin every single part of them, this is the part where you stop listening.
Mm-hmm.
I highly suggest you go play that game. And then come back and then tell us about your experience playing that game in the form of an email.
Yeah. It's a lot like the other really narrative-focused games we played, where we're going to talk about everything, and it would not be the same experience if you had heard us talking about it.
Do we want to talk about this, like, act by act?
Yeah.
I think that would be
helpful.
I think
taking it sequentially and discussing the differences of how we played it.
Sure.
Kind of feel.
Did you guys name your dog?
Yeah.
What'd you name your dog?
Blue.
Blue.
My dog's name is Homer.
Nice. Those were the two, I think.
Well, you can also not name it.
Yeah.
And like, people just say, like, hey, you bring in your dog, you know?
Yeah.
Seemed like a blue.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Dog in a straw hat, man. Blue's a good name for dog in a straw hat. Homer's not a bad name either.
Yeah.
I felt the need to give the dog a name. Right? When confronted with that very early decision.
Yeah. That, All right, so should we start with Equus Oils?
Yeah.
So, you start the game, you're at the, like, gas station.
Driving a truck.
Has an enormous chest rock sticking out of the ground. Did you guys notice the thing with the horse head, though?
No.
So, the underground chambers are the rest of the horse's body.
Oh!
Like, that's why they go off in little angular, tiny little things, is those are the horse's legs.
Okay.
That, like, if you can... Because you can't see the whole view of it, it's easy to not notice.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah. I thought that...
There's a lot of my brain noticed it that I didn't in that game.
So, Equus Oils. User Conway is not real. Is the thing the computer sells you. At Equus Oils.
Okay.
Which I thought was really important.
That felt necessary to write down.
Yeah. So, one thing I wrote fairly early on is that I don't feel this way about... parts of Act 3 and Act 4, what I feel this way very strongly about Act 1 and Act 2 is that everything can be unpacked. I think that in Act 3, there are small parts of it that are noise to the signal. And that in Act 4, there's a lot of it. That's just like, right? To just make it feel like a more full journey, I guess. Like, I don't, like... malign them doing this. But in Act 1 and 2, every single thing feels intentional.
Yeah. In Act 2 especially.
Yeah.
In Act 1, I'd say there's a fair... Not a fair bit, but, like, there's some noise.
As we get closer to the other world,
right,
it becomes more and more intentional every
single thing. There's some, like, weird literary, like, obfuscating fuzz on top of the stuff in Act 1 and 2, but you can work your way through it.
Well, so, like for example, like, we were talking about Equus Oils, like, the first thing you find in Equus Oils is, like, the weird D&D players in the basement.
With their glow-in-the-dark dye.
Yeah.
And then they're gone.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know if I can tie them to anything, like, other than there's nerd ghosts in the basement of the gas station.
Yeah, they're really disjointed from the rest of it in a way that I don't think they need to be.
Like, Act 1 feels very much like the one they made first, which it obviously is. But also, Equus Oils, like, I don't know if this is true, it feels like the first part of the game they made.
It sort of feels, and I, you know, we talked about this previously, the whole, it feels a little disjointed from everything else, because you never run into that character ever again, like Joseph, right?
You go back to the gas station at one point, don't you?
It's optional. Yeah, like, you drive by it.
I never did.
But I never went back to it.
So, I guess that's maybe why I have that impression. But it feel like, to me, that would be the thing that you put together to show as, like, a demo.
It also, like publishers, it introduces enough of the weird.
Yeah.
In a, like, encapsulated space.
I wanted to say, before we get too far, the interface for dialogue options sliding up bothered me the entire time.
Yeah, accidentally click shut.
Because you accidentally click shut all the time if you don't wait for every single option to come up, and it's oftentimes not clear that all the options have come up. So, like, the whole thing, it's like...
When you
load in the web page, like, everything kind of zips around because it's dealing with the images resizing themselves.
And then the ads load in and fuck up your click, and you clicked an ad, and now you're talking to porn. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, so that was a thing that happened to me. Also, like, remember when we talked about Oxenfree, that you learn a lot from the dialogue options you don't choose?
Yeah.
This game does this a lot.
It does it a ton.
Yeah. There's a lot of dialogue options that have completely different weights to them in this game that, like, I immediately would pick the one that felt good. Like, like, in the situation with that character.
Like, I wasn't... Like, in most video games, I'm thinking about, you know, what does this get me mechanically?
Right, what information am I getting?
Right.
What?
But with this game, it's always, like... What would Shannon say?
Right. There's a very much like a what do they need, not me.
Well, it also reminds me of a thing I read on Josh Sawyer's Tumblr the other day, where, like, someone asked him, I can't remember what the actual underlying question was, but it was something to do with dialogue and player choice and how it matters. Mm-hmm. And, like, basically, like, he went in to say, like, player choice matters in dialogue even when there's, like, literally no... mechanical effect of the dialogue you're picking. Because, like, when I'm playing Conway and I'm talking to fucking Shannon or what or whoever, like, even just, like, the dialogue things I pick changes the way I feel about Conway, and also determines his backstory to some degree.
And yeah, that's the thing that's, like, really cool about when you hit those branches, is that it totally changes things behind and in front of and where you are about your perception of
the character. It was like Shannon's like, who were you talking to on the phone? It was like, my ex. And then it was your ex, male or female. Right? And that's, like, different all the time.
Or like, the other options were my boss and, like each of those options totally changes what the priority is.
And then in Act 4, when Conway is just getting drunk all the time, there were all these dialogue options that Shannon had to, like, talk to him about his drinking.
Try and help him.
And I never took those because it was extremely uncomfortable. I was like, I don't want to talk to Conway about this. He's going through a hard time.
Yeah.
He deserves a drink.
Yeah.
Right? And he's not being a dick. He's kind of rambling, but like, he's fine.
Well, you know, like, with that kind of stuff, I fell down a similar path I picked similar options because, like, I felt like I was being asked as the player, do I think Conway is drinking a lot right now? Or do I think Conway is an alcoholic?
Right.
And I would prefer, like, because I like Conway, I want him to not be an alcoholic.
Yeah.
But, like, that's one of the big themes of Conway, is that he's, like, this huge alcoholic.
Yeah. I
like that like, option to deny it.
Yeah.
Right?
And if anything, I'm like, almost, like, living out his denial.
Yeah.
By not wanting
But it felt like the right thing to do still. But anyway, I was totally on board, completely ignoring it, and just being like, Conway deserves a drink. He's in massive debt. This is fine. Until he jumped off the telephone platform. And So, like, did you do that part, or did you stay on the boat for that one?
When we get to that point, I stayed on the boat every chance I got.
Okay. So I did all off-boat options.
Yeah, same here.
So you did all on-boat?
Yeah.
That's really cool. So,
I liked the boat.
When you go,
part of it.
When you go to, the telephone platform where it's like, these people have telephone business to conduct, and Will's like, Will calls the message machine at the Bureau of Unclaimed Spaces, and listens to their messages, which is super weird. I don't like Will. Just putting it out there.
Does he mention why?
He's the guy with the no shirt who's on the Mucky Mammoth, right?
Yeah, he's the guy with no shoes.
He's the boat forget guy.
Yeah. Okay.
So he's talking about how, like, the waters make you forget, which is partially why I forgive Conway for jumping into the waters. But Conway's like, he's sitting around, he's like, oh, I thought this was going to be bigger and more interesting. I'm going to go look for some liquor on the boat. And he literally jumps off the boat and doesn't, like, crawl stroke swim back. Just kind of treads water back to the boat. So he's like vertical in the water and just kind of goes back to the boat. And you're like, holy shit. And then everyone else on the pontoon is just kind of like, is your man okay? Like, is your dude cool?
Well, and like, if someone asks me, is Conway okay? It's like, man,
no. Look at his fucking leg.
Don't fucking ask me
look
that.
Look at his fucking arm. That, yeah. Like, because the leg, that's one thing, but it's spreading. Like, yeah. That's the big issue.
So I want to talk about, like, to help the listener who may have not heeded our advice. Mm. I want to talk about the visual art style to this game.
It's...
Like, it's a 3D game.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It is a 3D game in the, like, 2.5D, almost always the same side perspective way, but there's a lot of cool stuff they do when you're in enclosed spaces where stuff goes between the player and the camera.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... Everything is 3D modeled, but there's, like, no texture.
Mm-hmm.
Or very little
texture. Yeah, it's almost all flat color.
The whole game is doing this, like, whole low-poly aesthetic.
Yeah, the texture is all polygonal, not, like, yeah. Not mapping or anything.
And like, very fine, like, single-pixel wide lines.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, like, a lot of levels, you'll move through them in a 3D way, in the way that, if you had a diorama cut out of a cardboard box like you'd make in school, and you, like, stuck your head through it, and you passed through some of the layers.
Oh my god, I loved the way that the boat appeared and disappeared when you're on it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say, what's that VR talk show? What's it called?
The Fu Show?
Yeah, the Fu Show.
I want Fu Show for
all those environments.
So, I can't remember where I found it. A while back, I found someone who had basically cracked open the data files of Kentucky Route Zero just to, like, get big still shots of some of the levels and
right,
stuff.
Right, because you're very
so
controlled in,
like,
where your camera work is.
Meticulously designed in... Like the art style does just as much of as the writing and the content itself to make the game this, like, haunting existential thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, the visuals are going to stick with me the same way the dialogue does, but on this completely other level.
Oh, yeah.
That
well, like in Act One, like the first time you set up the TV,
yeah,
and like you can see the planks of the house like peel apart one by one as it goes and looks at the barn behind the house.
It does transitions in a way that only a video game can,
yeah,
and does them in a really artistic, interesting way.
Yeah.
Like,
So I was thinking a lot about so you have the regular world, which is just mm-hmm. our world,
yeah,
right,
just Kentucky.
And then so you have. Layered underneath it, the other world, which is very, like, monomyth, like Hero's Journey. Like, you have to go down there and something bad has to happen to you, and you have to go find someone to give you a boon, and there's, like, all this shit,
yeah.
Right?
Well, like, and also, all the people that live in the, like, magical underworld are, like, more or less trapped there, and, like, not in a way that they're, like, that they feel trapped by, or that they're even aware of, but, mm-hmm. like, I always got the impression that everyone in the Zero, and everyone in the Echo, and everyone in those, like, weird spaces...
Pockets.
You know, they're trapped like a ghost is trapped.
Well, so, I was thinking about it this way, like, the Zero felt to me in the first and second chapters, first and second acts, as, like, the place where, so, it's American myth, it's American monomyth, right? So it's very American. It's very about Americana.
There's this bureaucracy
and like
underground.
Mythic
and
qualities of America, right?
Sure.
But it's like, with the bureaucracy of reclaimed spaces, the Bureau of Reclaimed Spaces, you have like everything that is like unused mythic quality sort of falls under,
mm-hmm.
right? And then becomes the property and the purview of this bureau.
This weird
right?
underworld.
Which is like very American to have this bureaucracy that's like totally almost non-functional. But then still managed.
It's like non-functional, and it's also
and there's three people getting it.
It's
done.
It's the word the way I put it was crumbling infrastructure is Americana.
Yeah, like it's right. It's also like it's unaware of the gravity of its own existence too. Because
right.
like the people there just talk to you like they're fucking office.
They're
drones.
Just going through the motions,
but they
right?
don't realize that they're like filing myth away.
Yeah,
right.
And also like did you guys go all the way to the top floor at the mm-hmm. bureau?
Yeah.
So, sometimes when you look at that space, you're in a cavern. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you look at that space, you're in, like, a fucking vaulted cathedral. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's a canal that rolls through it that you just couldn't see because you were looking at it from a certain mm-hmm. direction. Like, it's...
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. It's weird. Like, also, third floor, bears.
Yeah, bears.
Yeah, but that's, like...
I just love how weird and literal it was. Like, okay, cool, bears.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's just more, like...
Yeah.
Strangeness. I don't know, what else do we want to talk about with Act 1?
So, Conway's pride is, like, the source of his pain.
Yeah, I mean, it takes more or less the whole game to, like, kind of figure out what Conway's whole bag is.
Right.
And, like, I mean, obviously he knows what's wrong the whole time.
Right.
Like he knows that he's a fucking alcoholic. He knows, like, that he's got this weird baggage with his friend and his boss and, you know... Mm-hmm.
He feels like a guy who thinks he's trapped by his circumstances, when he's chosen them, right? Like,
oh yeah, well, it's like the distillery boy is taking him away. Like, he does, and no, like, Shannon's always trying to tell him, like, you don't have to do this. Like, you don't.
Right.
Have
it doesn't occur to him that he can fight it.
One thing I wanted to bring up was that there's a lot of false choice stuff in the first act.
Sure.
Where it presents you with a choice, but it's not really a choice.
Well, yeah, like, in terms of, like, branching gameplay.
Right, but what I'm saying is that sets up a theme for the rest of the game, especially for Conway, since Conway's, like, the character you play as in the first one. Like, the cave, when you're in there with the tram.
The mine.
There's one exit, and it's the one you're already facing, right? And so, she's like, oh, do you want to explore? And that's, like... That's not a real choice, right? Because you could go around and explore, but it doesn't, like, give you anything except for more time spent in the soup of, like, this game, right? Like, there's no real choice. You're just leaving, and that's, like, that's Conway, right? It's very Conway. And I wanted to talk about, there's triangles everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? Of people. I mentioned this to
Owen. There's also just visually triangles everywhere.
Yeah, there are, because the stalactites are all triangles.
And the plants, viney plants are just triangles.
Triangles, yeah. Which they call grotesques at some point, at the Bureau of Reclaimed Spaces. Yeah. And then I was going to say, so, like, the triangle thing, that's a thing from certain mythologies where there's three gods in control of everything, right? And there's one that, like, makes the stuff, one that orders it, one that, like, recycles it back into sort of nothingness, and then it gets made again, right? So it's like a...
Well, and most of the conversational situations in that game are not between two people. Like, once you get past the dynamic of just Conway and Shannon...
Yeah,
like,
it's usually... Oh, I didn't even thought about that.
Yeah. Like conversationally, it's always more than a back and forth.
That's super cool.
They're always, like, very sort of dynamic
things. I was super excited to talk about with you, these guys, with you guys, this game, because there's things you guys are going to notice that I didn't.
Oh, sure.
Right? And it was, like, super exciting for me. Because, again, Twin Peaks the game, super good.
The thing about this game that's really cool is there's all this depth to it that you can choose to take with you as you go, right? There's a lot of stuff that, like, may be referential that I didn't get, but I didn't need to
You can make the choice to, like, let stuff gloss over you.
Or just let it wash over you and let your brain notice it, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff where it's just sort of marinating
in
the back of my head. Like,
I have two more notes for Act 1, which is the TV is magic.
Yeah,
like
TVs and radios are magic.
TVs and radios are magic, which makes Shannon a fucking wizard.
Yeah,
Which is cool.
And Weaver too.
Right, and Weaver.
Yeah.
But, like, in very different ways.
Yeah,
which is neat. And they're both Marquezes, which is cool. And then the highway in the mine that you check out. That, like, so if you go down the pathway in the mine that said this is the pathway that the flood came from because they dug too deep. If you look through the crack, you see the fucking zero.
Yeah.
Right. Or at least I think it's the
same. And there's a reference, later.
Yeah, you see it later.
Okay. Well, and there's a reference later to, like, someone dug too far, this is causing the bat. Like, there's a couple of things
that The bats from Xanadu came up through here. Mm-hmm. Also, I believe there is it's a bit back in my memory. I didn't play through all of the game getting ready for this, but I played through certain bits again. I believe later when you are driving your truck down the zero, you get to see yourself.
Yes.
Like, you see that driving perspective, and you can also see yourself peeking
at the zero. There's, like, some weird circular time shit going on.
Yeah. There's, like dream logic shit. One thing I gotta say is I love that you can replay not just the whole game.
Yeah.
Right, you can just replay certain acts, like, yeah. if you just want to get certain parts.
Yeah, I like that it bounces you back to that menu each
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
I want to tie in the TV radio thing to... So, there's this thing with not just TVs and VCRs, there's radios, there's even the tape recorder later.
Oh, yeah.
Like, anything that's, like, electronic in nature mm-hmm. has this, like... But, mythical quality
but,
to it.
But also, like, it's all, like, pre-21st century.
Yeah.
You know, it's
all, like, transistor shit. Like,
yeah, or in, like, crappy closed-circuit TV. Like, there's a yeah. number of times where you watch...
Crumbling infrastructure yeah. Yeah, no. is and, Americana.
And, but, yeah. but, and you're saying that, and it's funny because all of those things, like, are yeah. super American.
Right,
and
right,
that
right.
they're tied to this mythology that mm-hmm. it's
to
throwing
this, to
away.
This, to this thrown away... America has shitty myths. Comma, oh brother, where art thou?
Yeah. yeah, and that this game, like, just sort of goes and sits in it. Right?
yeah, like, yeah, yeah. Like, it really marinates. So I have a note here for Act 2, which is Dream Logic. Next note. Act 2 really lets loose with the comic book crazy. Next note.
Oh, yeah.
Manhattan Projects, comma, J.J. done right. So, like, J.J. Abrams does his fucking, like, dartboard writing, and it's like, oh, it's so crazy, but it's like, this is the correct way to approach
there's a clear,
that kind of...
There's a clear through
yeah.
the weird,
yep.
rather than the weird being weird
and
for
weird's
sake.
And it's actually unpackable, because you're not just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what
yeah.
sticks.
Well, yeah.
Like, also, like...
There's a destination.
It's very clear in, like, Act 2 that they figured out more, like, what they want that game to be about. Because, like, in Act 1, like, one of the things you can do when you leave Aqua's Oils, because, like, they give you those directions, mm-hmm. like, see the tree on fire, take a left or whatever, mm-hmm. and you're there.
You can just drive the fuck around.
You can drive wherever the fuck you want on that map, and you can click on all the little stops and get your own, like, little weird X-Files moment
mm-hmm.
when you see an empty diner with ghosts in it or whatever, or you like, this and that. And there's, like... That type of stuff is, like, almost completely absent from the rest of the game, of just, like, these completely disposable, just weird occurrences.
Monster of the week
right.
shit.
Yeah. The weird is in service to the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah exactly. Yeah.
So, one thing I wrote here that I'd really love to touch on is that I love that I don't have to pixel hunt with an exclamation
oh, yeah.
next to it. Fuck yeah. Right?
Like, yeah, there's,
it,
like...
It breathed life into the adventure game... concept here in ways that I really didn't like
expect. Yeah, I never had to apply an item to anything. I put right. a character somewhere and I look at a thing and
it,
I interact.
It turns
with
out
it.
We actually didn't need most of what makes adventure games.
Right. It turns out like walking around and interacting with,
like,
objects was enough.
Navigating cool spaces and dialogue.
So Act 1 ends when you go into the Zero.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you hook up the TV, right, the barn turns into the tunnel and you're in the
yeah,
Zero.
Yeah, and there's like
this
like sort of dreamy thing where you are watching the Zero entrance, and then your truck drives
doing,
into
yeah.
it, and it's like, oh, I guess that's me.
Yeah. Oh, well, here we go.
Yeah.
Which the game, like, never gives you full control, so you're never having a problem with it when you don't have
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a note here about things I noticed about... So there's the part in Act 2 and the part in Act 1 where Conway and Shannon will be having a conversation with the third person. Right? Mm-hmm. And the thing I have noted here is Conway the goldfish, Shannon the dog.
Absolutely.
Because Conway's like, what about this? What about this?
Yeah.
What about this?
Right.
And Shannon's like, what the fuck do we
right,
need?
Right, right, yeah, right. So, like, Conway is this, like, in the moment, enjoy what he can get guy.
Well, so like, it's like, Conway's the man needing to make the delivery, mm. and, like, getting the delivery done is, like, almost the last thing on his mind. Because, mm. like, if this is his last delivery, if this is the end of the line for him, like, he's clearly here to, like, he's not in a rush.
Well, and,
he wants to drink
and
he's
think
drinking
about,
it in.
Think about where he's at, right?
Yeah.
This is his identity.
Yeah.
And he's losing it. Mm-hmm. So he's going to take his fucking time, right? Like,
yeah.
I know some guys like that, you know? Like I get it. I don't necessarily relate, but I see it. And that's why he is the way he is.
Yeah.
And I feel bad where I'm at now. That, like, I used Shannon to push him along after I know where we go with it. But also, like, I wanted to move on in the game, right? Like, so it serves this weird double function, the way they interact with a third person.
I have a fun note here. Katamari Trauma.
Or yeah.
Katamari Traumacy. I'm going to say that.
Sure. Yeah.
Great.
Because they just, like, roll around inflicting and
yeah.
picking up new people.
And reliving everyone's shit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this game is all about, like, when I want to say that this game feels literary in a way a lot of games don't, because
oh,
the
sure.
characters come in with things, in a way that a lot of video game characters don't, right? Mm-hmm. Conway's whole life is behind him in this mm-hmm. game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and like, the characters have, like, a scope that, like, we don't get to see and like, feels very real.
Yeah.
You know, like,
we talk about games feeling lived in. These people yeah, are lived
yeah,
in.
Yeah, like, mm-hmm. like, when we pick up Ezra, like he's got some shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, when you pick up Johnny and Junebug.
Yeah.
I love Johnny and Junebug.
Right, I love Johnny people. And Junebug, too. Okay, here's the thing I didn't realize until, like, almost the end of Act 4.
What's that?
Is that I try to ignore Ezra as much as possible, and I don't know why.
Okay.
Like, that's a really weird thing about me.
You're ignoring the abandoned child,
yeah,
Matt.
Yeah, I was definitely like, go away, I don't want to deal with you, like, the entire game.
So that's part of why I stayed on the boat.
I didn't realize I was doing it.
Yeah.
Right? So that's part of why I stayed on the boat, is because he's, like, the focal point, and I wanted more.
I didn't realize I was doing it until the mushroom picking experience.
Oh, yeah?
And then I was like, oh, I, like, ignore Ezra as much as possible. What am I doing?
He's kind of introduced, like, less so than the other characters,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he sort of just tags along. So, like, I can get why you don't...
So, well, like, so because... super, super cool moment right before Ezra's introduced. You're up on the roof of that, of the building of buildings.
Oh, yeah.
The Museum of Domiciles, I believe,
yeah,
is what it is. And like, I notice in the background, I see a thing with wings go bird. By. And I immediately dropped my pencil and wrote, Dragon! on my notepad here. And I was super excited for it to be Dragon. And then it was an American bald eagle, and I was like, right, America.
Yo, but it's not just an American bald eagle. It's a giant fucking yeah. American bald eagle.
It's an American Mordor fucking eagle.
Yeah, that thing, picks up houses.
Thing I also notice, all music in this game is diegetic, even if yeah. it's like a band in the foreground for some reason.
yeah.
yeah.
Oh, the band. They're
yeah.
so good.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
I
love when they float by at the restaurant underground.
So they're also always showing up when Act 2 ends. Of any act
oh,
you're in.
Oh, right, yep.
Yeah,
the music hits and you're like, oh, here it comes.
I believe this game's only made. This is like another super small team. I believe one of the developers sings.
Okay, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Because it's like actually a band. It's the Bedquilt Ramblers.
Mm, okay,
wait, you mean there's more?
Well, not much.
Like, of course there's good. More.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, the music fits the game.
You can find more of Junebug singing.
Nice.
Because they...
That's really good.
They do, like...
That song was really good.
They do, like, weird ARG stuff on their YouTube channel.
Oh, nice.
So, there's another Junebug song.
Cool.
Yeah,
so, like, this game, we were talking about how the dialogue options don't necessarily actually give you a choice. Right, like I think we all ended up in the same places the way we're talking about things.
Well, as far as like story beats go, but they give you a lot of choice as far as character backstory.
They change the way you feel
right.
about yeah. things.
But it's not like branching path based on
yeah. Time, but it's like, super cool that like
it's way better than that.
Yeah,
I think it's way more interesting that I have a different experience of these characters because of my decisions, rather than it being a different experience of events.
Sure.
Well, I mean, okay, so let's ask the question: who's your favorite character? I like Johnny.
I like,
Johnny's Robot Boy?
Johnny's Robot Boy, yeah.
Cricket?
Cricket, yeah.
Okay.
I really liked that explanation. That made me feel, like...
Their relationship is adorable.
Validated,
in the best way.
And,
yeah.
like, just, oh, man.
And it says so much without saying much at all,
mm-hmm.
in a way that I really appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, for me it's either Conway or Junebug. I like Junebug a lot. She's cool. I like that they have their little sidecar motorcycle.
Shane Boy?
I feel Shannon.
Yeah?
It's a sibling thing.
Sure.
Like, y'all know me.
Sure, sure, sure.
Anytime I run into someone who reflects with me, I'm like, yeah, you're my shit. Like, I forget her name, but the girl who's the mechanic in the Rebellion in Episode 8.
Was, like, Rose?
Totally my shit, too, for the same reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you got what I got and you get representation that's anywhere near it, it's really cool.
Cool.
So, yeah, and the thing that sort of resonates with me about Shannon is she's chasing something she can't get, right?
Well, yeah, like,
you don't,
her sister's
there's
whatever, right?
You know, like,
her sister went off with the distillery guys.
Yeah,
like,
or... Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
so she's
but also
like
she
an
went,
electric skeleton somewhere.
No, she went past them. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah, yeah, because that's the thing.
Is like, every time you get somewhere you know she was, she's somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's what I was about to say. Is like...
Because they're like, yeah, she helped us with the adding machine and then left.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, with Weaver, she, like, kind of, like, in the same way that, like, Conway and Shannon are on this, like, indeterminate journey.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's something there's clearly something that like Weaver's looking for or trying to get away from.
Something's driving Weaver, and she's after Weaver, so she's constantly like, yeah. That's it, right? Like, and there's something about that that's like.
Do you think we'll find Weaver at Dogwood Drive?
Like, maybe she's the one we had to deliver to. Mm-hmm. It was like the first person Conway meets.
The way the game goes, I don't think so. The way
things
have gone, like, I don't think so. And I don't think I want that.
I'm not sure if I do. Like, I could take it either way.
Yeah.
Like,
I think...
Like, if we never see Weaver I'm fine with that.
I want to talk about the game's relationship with the concept of oldness. Because it shows up a lot. Like, when the truck dies, it's because it hit an old tree.
Yeah.
Conway is old.
All the tech is old.
The tech is all old. The Moss computer is extra old.
That's way old.
Yeah. Like, with the crystals and shit. Like... It has, there's an interesting, like, old keeps popping up, so I just wanted to mention.
Well, and even, like, the...
I mean, that, do you think that's just more a part of the...
The crumbling thing?
Yeah, the crumbling infrastructure thing.
Yeah, probably.
There's it, like a... people as crumbling infrastructure.
Right.
There's like, a feel to, especially when you hit the river, of this, like, southern folklore...
Because everything
adjacent to elder gods type shit going on that like.
So my understanding is there are cave networks under Kentucky like this.
I believe it
to some degree. Obviously, they're not weird timeless spaces,
right?
Where...
But there's this like
weird skeletons
and tugboats.
There's this weird like forgotten echo shit going on down there that feels like a really like old world thing in a way that like matches up with what you're talking about for me.
Sure.
So it was at this point that I noticed that there was no VO in the game at all. Like any time you heard the radio in the background,
it's just the singing. The
music. So it was in Act 3 when we're rolling around in the Zero, like going to Xanadu and shit.
Mm-hmm.
That there was no VO, and then all of a sudden, when we do a flashback to Lizette's house. Mm-hmm. There's actual voices on the radio.
Oh,
it really threw me. I was like, "Yeah," which I like the fact that there's no voiceover for the characters, so that their voices can't sound wrong to me.
Yeah.
The soundscape of this game is really interesting in that it uses the emptiness, way more than other games do, and it uses it to make everything else more empty than it already is.
And make it more impactful, and also just to give you time to, like, dwell on everything you...
It can't distract you out of what you're... Yeah. What you're sitting in.
So the flashback was when I wrote the thing I talked about earlier, which is, all this can be unpacked. I apparently trademarked that. All this can be unpacked, TM. And then I wrote a note that just says, electricity... It's like, what is the relationship between electricity and these, like, mythic things, right?
It's magic, man.
Right. I mean... but then there's also, I want, like, so the first object you're given, the first thing that Conway ever gets is a lantern, right? And you need to turn the lantern off.
Sure.
For it to work.
Yeah, for you to find the...
Right?
Yeah, there's so some there, shit
so
with
there,
light
So there's
in
shit
there.
With light there where, like, with the bats, you need to turn it off for it to work.
I never did. Did I miss something by
Oh, you missed conversations.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like when you turn it off, they talk to each other.
I enjoyed the, like, bats doing things. Like, I enjoyed the scene of it, but I didn't want to turn it off.
I was scared. Bats are scary. I liked that Johnny and Jude Bog literally blew the roof off the joint.
Oh, yeah.
That was
cool. That's another one of those, like, really, like, not jaw-dropping, but, like, mesmerizing
Oh,
moments.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, when all the roof tiles float up into the sky, so, well, and her outfit changes.
Our Keenan and I's mutual roommate, had friends over when that was happening. And my computer's in the front room, and it's a big TV, you can see it. That scene was playing when that was happening, and usually when I'm playing video games in the corner, everyone ignores me, but they were like, what game is that? What is he doing?
So the thing about that scene that I really love is it does that thing that a concert that works for you does. You're not in that room anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like it's this cool visual, like, their clothes change, right? Like,
yeah. Like, Junebug goes from having blue hair to having a blue dress.
Yeah. And, like there's this magical realism touch to that that is, like, when a concert hits you, it's that. In a way that, like... Oh, they get it, like, kind of thing that was cool. And even that bar is, like, the forgotten infrastructure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, they bought their booze on an IOU, yeah. Like...
Like, I think, like, everyone's been in, like at least one of those
bars. Yeah, for sure. Know?
Yeah. And for some reason, I wrote the phrase pharmacoptic magic somewhere near this scene. Like, somebody took some drugs at some point, and they did magic things to them. Oh, right, it was because he took the thing and his leg turned into fucking electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Because he took the drug that was... That's why I wrote TM, because he kept saying TM. The TM drug, yeah. In the
I'm a doctor, but this is the only drug I prescribe, yeah. And it turns you into a robot.
Yeah, it turns you into a fucking electric skeleton.
The only part of that game... the only part of Act 3 that, like, I didn't enjoy being in at all is when I was in Xanadu, it felt like I was, like, just stuck in quicksand. Mm-hmm. Like, I just met these people. I don't know what they are, what they're about, and, like, I have to hear about them. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm so much more interested in, like...
Everything else.
Yeah, on, like, yeah. Moving
well,
forward.
Well, and I think that space is functioning how it should, then.
Yeah, because it's supposed to make you feel oppressed.
Because they are there for the same reason, sure. Right?
But I feel like, as a result, though, I also, like, I didn't retain very much.
Oh, and I got out quick. So like, I feel you on that.
So if we're drawing a circle of the hero's journey... Mm-hmm. Right? So there's this point at the bottom of the circle where, like, so 70% of the circle is in the other world and like, 30% of it is in the real world, right? Mm-hmm. And so you go down, you do all the shit, and you get to the bottom. I think that the lower depths when they're in their bar, mm-hmm. and, like, all the characters are assembled, but everyone's, like, kind of aimless and doesn't really know what they're doing.
Sure.
But they still, there's this beautiful thing, so there's, like, more to strive for, right? That, like, that's the nadir of the hero's journey circle.
Well, and there's right. so much acceptance of what is wrapped around them.
Well, also, I think, like, the bar is definitely where I first realized, like, Conway's been turning into an orange skeleton for a while, but, like, I think the bar is where I first, like, really realized, like, this guy's in a bad way.
Yeah. And it's not coming, you're not coming
yeah,
back.
Yeah, yeah, and he's not coming out of it.
And he's not making an effort to, either.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, yeah, I guess that's where I realized that, like, he's not even concerned with trying to fight this.
Right,
you know,
he
like,
keeps drinking.
Yeah.
Which, like...
Makes it worse.
Drinking something is what got him here.
Yeah.
Drinking something is what got him in trouble. Drinking something, like...
Yeah. His alcoholism is literally turning him into a distillery employee.
Uh-huh.
What the hell is up with horses?
Horses are a symbol of old America and the old West.
There you go. Thank you. Fives.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't get that. Thank you. I couldn't put two together there. Awesome. I noticed that Junebug was making robot noises in the Hall of the Mountain King. And I freaked out about it.
They don't really move that much until then.
And then one scene later, she's like, oh, I'm a robot.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. Cool, I thought I was, like, all perceptive and shit, and you're just gonna bust it out?
In the YouTube video where she's singing, the woman who's singing, because, like, obviously, like, it can't just be this, like, textureless pixel person, mm-hmm. The woman's face is just painted silver.
Nice. I think the thing that I love about the visual art style being this, like, sort of blank thing is that it makes all of those dialogue options and all of those things you put into those characters mm-hmm. have way more value because you don't have other details.
In the original prototype for this game, they all had, like, very detailed faces.
Really?
And it's, like... And obviously this is because, like, I've played this game the way I played it.
Yeah.
That, like, when I see it, it's like, ugh. Like,
They made the right decisions.
Do away with
right?
this. I don't want this.
Did we talk about the forest with the houses and how you can, like, sometimes see through trees and sometimes can't?
No, like the end of Act 2.
Yeah, that was way fucking cool.
Yeah, it looks cool. That's a great sequence.
That was another time where I started noticing it, I think, a moment before I was supposed to.
Sure.
And wrote it down. And then it
yeah,
happened
a bunch.
Yeah,
you feel clever about it. Yeah.
I kind of like that the game mentions it after you have an opportunity to notice it though.
Yeah.
Because it's doing the thing that, like, weird ephemeral shit needs to do where it mentions it when it's important.
Yeah.
And it also gives you room to notice it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Which I liked.
Alright.
So, yeah, after
to the end of Act 3?
Mm-hmm. Well, because, so I'm, right now in my notes, I'm at the third time you're in the Hall of the Mountain King.
Third time.
So it was, I go to the Hall of the Mountain King, then I go to Xanadu, then I go back to the, I go out to the yard and talk to Junebug. She gives me the chat about being specific about Cricket.
I didn't get that chat at all.
Well, the one, so you say, like, why do you call him Cricket? He's like, because isn't he your boyfriend? He's like, no, he's my Cricket.
Right.
It's more specific.
Okay.
I like being specific. And I really, 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 really like that. Let me say really again, because I'm a lazy writer. And then back at Xanadu, and I have a lantern again. Because the whole light thing, like, I have a lantern in a space that's literally on fire. Right? So it's, like, really...
Right, the lantern isn't about the light it's putting off. It's yeah, about something
it's about,
else.
It's about something else. And then... I wrote down bed quilt for some reason.
Bed quilt ramblers?
There must have been an actual bed quilt, because that was the first time I'd heard that phrase. Okay.
There's something when Xanadu's fuzzy, it mentions it.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I was trying to write down the things Xanadu was saying when it was all fucked up.
Yeah.
Then I wrote down Lula fossil art. Like, she made art out of fossils at some point.
Yeah.
Then
Lula, I wrote Lula Chamberlain or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, Lula Chamberlain. And then I wrote down the word fuck, followed by cave people, because when they appeared on the Xanadu machine, I literally lost my breath.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It took my breath away. Yeah, I was actually scared.
They're pretty chilling.
Yeah.
Like, when
especially
they,
that
presented
way.
In that way,
like,
right?
Yeah, no, yeah. Like, because they're telling you the story of, like, we're down here and there's some shit, it's kind of weird. And,
yeah, well, and this is, like, kind of a factual account.
And they, like, show up and fuck with your stuff.
Yeah, well,
which is like,
it's the distillery boys, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is, but in that moment you don't know that,
yeah,
you haven't met them, like... Like, so they're these weird fucking electric people who come in and fucking touch your computer while you let them do that.
It's funny, though, that they don't, like, make it clear that it's the distillery boys at first, because, like, if you saw glowing orange skeletons, would you write down in your journal, tonight I met some cave people, or would you write down, holy shit, I saw glowing
orange
flickering skeletons?
Yeah, yeah, with tape recorders around their necks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, each member of the, like... biggest triune, which is what I kept calling them,
mm-hmm.
Joseph, Donald, and Lula are, like, mm-hmm. the biggest one, because they, like, set off the events of what's happening.
Sure.
Right? They each give you a task. Each of them tasks you in turn.
Okay.
Right? Like Joseph's like, go to the Zero.
Yeah.
That's where you need to go. And, like, Lula's like, you need to do these things for me to be able to process in the computer Dogwood Drive, and then you need to go to Donald, because her computer sucks.
Sure. Okay.
Because the computer can't handle ambiguity the way, like, Xanadu can.
Oh, okay.
Right?
And you can't find the files.
Well, because you... Because
you end up sidetracking because the files
yeah, yeah, yeah.
are
so each
to
one of
don't.
Them gave you a task, which I thought was kind of important, mm-hmm. right? And then somebody at one point mentioned that strangers hate mold, which I thought was interesting enough to write down. I don't know why, but...
I think that's just the distillery boys taking the mold, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
yeah. Before they figured
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, yeah, because I didn't
before
know,
Weaver
they,
came
I didn't
in
know
and
that
fixed
they
it.
Were the... yeah.
I love that bit of...
Oh, and I really like this note. None of that walking around for no reason shit.
Yeah. I love the bit where you as Conway go down into the distillery,
mm-hmm.
and then later you see it from Shannon,
Conway's.
From the other perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you go into the building and come out and you go, it wasn't fucking worth it in there.
Yeah.
Like, that sucked. And yeah. then later you find out, oh, thing, remember when I asked you how many scenes there were in Act 4, and you mm-hmm. were like, there's 10? There are 11. We skipped 10.
You skipped 10?
No, 10 is skipped in the numerology.
Really?
At least as far as I could tell. So, there was scene 9, and then nothing happened, and then there was scene 11.
I had a feeling that all those binary options on the boat meant, like, you're gonna get parts of it.
Sure. So, anyway, just thought I'd point that out. I don't know what it means, but that's what I experienced. Junebug found one of the tapes from the first act that you find with the miners singing. She
yep.
found one of those in Xanadu, in the Hall of the Mountain King.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then I wrote a bunch
of, like...
I'm trying
to remember, it's, like, insinuated that the people who made the recordings of the singing are characters we encounter somewhere else, too, right?
They're relatives and ancestors of, like, Weaver's family.
Oh, okay.
Right? Like,
okay,
that's,
yeah.
I think, the connection you're making right there.
I
and then
feel
there
like
was
there's
a
loose
scene...
connection to the tapes and the electric
Like, it feels like virtually every time there is a one-off character or a unidentified character, it turns out that they are, like...
somehow related.
They're someone you've encountered in some capacity.
And then at some point in Act 3, Conway's leg was not glowing in a scene. I am unsure if this was a visual glitch or if it means something, but there was a point at which his leg was not glowing. And then gender roles seem
maybe
to be reversed
drinking.
In the Zero as far as matriarchy, patriarchy.
Okay.
Like, women seem to be in positions of, like, captaincy and power and primacy, whereas
sure.
men seem to be more subordinate and, like,
I think it hits the men harder.
Well, I don't... sure.
whatever. Like that's the feeling I got
from it. I'm not putting any judgments on it. It's just a thing I noticed.
The men seem more catatonic, and the women are like, we're gonna fucking do something while we're here.
Catatonic's a good word for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when Lulu tells you guys to take care of each other. Mm-hmm. That one hit me really hard. Lulu's like, you guys need to take care of each other. Go get his leg fixed. Right. And then that was like the first time I saw one of the weird like interrupt videos from the public broadcasting station where you see Weaver just like doing some weird shit in a blank room.
Yeah.
That
space is.
Then I wrote Jet Age Skeleton Factory / Evil Genius Aesthetic.
Yeah, that room with all the like tests in it or whatever.
Well, the room where you first go to the distillery.
Okay.
When you go to the distillery, it reminded me of Evil Genius.
Oh, like, for sure. Evil's the huge the computer tape computers. Yeah. And they've got the little go-karts they drive around.
And then somebody said something about thousands of years. Like, the distillery or Xanadu has existed for thousands of years somehow.
Well, because they were cave people before Xanadu showed up, and they were cave people before the distillery, and they were cave, like, there's a thing there.
A job you never wanted transformed you into an electric skeleton. That seems... Yeah. Pretty succinctly.
Definitely Conway is a theme of been doing this too long.
Yeah.
Like all the way around.
Yeah.
I feel like the train operator from the final station and Conway would get along. But like by get along I mean like they would coexist in a space and barely speak.
They would be at the bar next to each
and
other
then,
drinking.
And then later you ask them, are you good friends? They would say yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Like they wouldn't even necessarily be pounding it. Like I could just see them both sitting on the curb next
just
to the chilling.
Street. Yeah, like, no, under like, a
flickering nothing's happening.
In that absolute like go fishing together way.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I wrote down the formula because the formula is real fucked up. The thing, you do the adding machine and everything's compound interest and you just, it like fucks you on the minor technicalities
constant
and
servitude.
It's bullshit. And then I wrote down Mammoth with an exclamation mark because that's the first time you see the Muck Mammoth.
That's a great act ending too, where it's like, you're at the bureau and it's like, oh, by the way, there's been a canal here the whole time. Mm-hmm. And it like shows them like,
so
burr.
There's a sailboat docked at one of the points where you're there. And I was like, oh, that's water. Weird.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, because all I saw was the mast and the line coming off the mast that stabilizes it, and I was like, oh.
So, I never noticed the sailboat, but I've, so I played through this game once all the way myself, and I've watched two other people play through it all the way through, and I never noticed the sailboat, but on the repeat viewings, I did notice the, like, dock cleats.
Yeah,
that was
on the side.
First thing I noticed when I went to that space. I tried to explore it and, like, go down those stairs, and I was like, this is like a... key. Like
I saw the cleats and I didn't really put it together until I saw the boat later. I was like, oh, that makes more sense.
And then I also wrote a note here, weird being presented as not weird, not weird being presented as weird. So like this is the thing, a trend I'm noticing is that like not weird things, like a boat with a mammoth on it for no fucking reason, everyone's like, yeah, this is fine.
Yeah, right. do you know where I can get this service? Like that's the conversation you're having about it.
And then there's like just like a dude on a sailboat, and you're like, "Hey man, what the fuck? Like, what's going on with you?
What's up with your boat?"
Yeah,
I think Ezra's the only one making a life. Everyone else has lived theirs.
Yeah, I but like Ezra also like he feels like a very. He doesn't have any focus or purpose, you know?
Because he doesn't have anyone to help him find one.
Yeah,
right?
he can't get past, like, it seems like he can't get past, like, not having his
being
parents.
Abandoned.
He finds it in the end the way I played him. Like, he's doing things that he wants to do.
Sure.
Which he definitely didn't have at the
beginning.
Man,
I'm going to have to replay Act 4, damn.
But, you know, like, he ends up playing with Theremin Lady.
Yeah.
Clara.
And,
Lithuanian.
And like, the way I played him was, like, he's decided this is okay, right? Like,
yeah, that's cool.
Like, those are the options I picked with him in a way that was, like, in the way everyone else is reacting in my playthrough, they're looking for what they need, but they aren't necessarily finding it, whereas Ezra is the only one who, like, I got the options that felt like he's good with where he's at, which is why I say he's living and they aren't. Right? Like, he's not chasing something. He has found something.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that's fair.
And then I'm on Act 4 now.
Okay.
With my notes.
Yeah. Act 4. Let's see what's
it was big. It's bigger than the
Yeah.
By, like, a wide margin.
Yeah, you start rolling on like, the
each
Echo.
Each other act took me less than an hour.
Yeah, especially act, the first act. The first act act's like half an hour.
Four took me 3 hours. Yeah. Like 3.5 hours.
I started act four at like 4 p.m. and played it to like 8. Like,
yeah. So I have...
And I was on the boat.
I have a big note here. Mechanics are afraid of romance / Shannon's hair. So in act four, they say something like Will says something about how like you must be afraid of like... like the romance of this if you're like a mechanic or something okay. like that. I don't exactly remember the quote, but he alluded to that like people of a mechanical mind must be afraid of romance, right? Like Will said something like that. And then her hair was up, which it wasn't before. Like it's in, okay. it's in like a bun thing on the back of her head. Shannon's hair changed in act four. That's what I
don't think I got that.
Yeah.
I wasn't paying attention to it either.
And then they're fucking on the River Styx because he talks about how the water makes you.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Like, yeah. that was like, oh, like, mm-hmm. that shit gets heavy when yeah. you get there. Like, mm-hmm. it's part of why I stayed on the boat, I think, is like the whole feel of it. Like, I mean, oh, yeah, that's the thing.
It's like I was talking about how, like, how the people are trapped there, you know? Like,
that's the thing. We yeah. rewrite the maps because stuff changes.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm thinking, like, that's not how a fucking map works, right? Like,
yeah, there's the gas station. You'll find it eventually.
You'll find it when you need it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, or you won't, and you'll drown, and no one talks about it.
It's yeah, like, oh, that shipwreck's not there anymore.
I have, like, would love to VR these environments.
Yeah.
I really want to step into these environments in VR.
I really love the way both the Zero and the Echo are, like, non-Euclidean spaces, for one, but that the way they're represented is, like, super simple, mm-hmm. and that actually does it a ton of favors.
Did you guys notice that, you move in the Zero, but the Echo moves around uh-huh. you.
Yeah.
Like, the boat uh-huh. never moves.
I
the
love...
camera and the Echo move.
Yeah, yeah.
I love when you get to the gas station in the Echo.
Norm and the Apple guy?
Yeah, because the gas station's, like, so bright and clean. Not clean, but, like, it looks like... Compared to everywhere else in that game, like, it's clean. And it's very evocative of, like... being on long road trips and stopping at a gas
station. Oh, stopping at a gas
station.
Yeah. Well, where it's like this episode weird 4 beacon. Is the road trip. That's yeah. what it is. That's yeah. why it's filled with shit. That's why the signal to noise ratio has changed.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and everything you stop at is an attraction.
Yeah.
Then this is where I noticed that I ignore Ezra a lot. And then I wrote down Norm, because Norm touched me. He's like waiting for his date. And you help him with his, like, date profile.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Yeah, he's like, at the gas station, he's like, what do you think about my dating profile? And you're like, Norm, you're a weird dude. You need to change your dating profile. Like, it's weird. And then he leaves, and you get the guy who's like, Glory, it's good to be among friends.
Yeah.
Because he ate all of his apples, and then the last apple had a fucking firebug in it. And it drank the tears off his cheek. Jesus. And he used that as a lantern to get yeah. to where he was trying
this
to go.
Is all yeah. shit I didn't get at all. So, I stayed on the boat every chance I got.
Okay.
And it was weird when it forced me out of the boat for Batson phone station. But every scene on the boat is this weird, tiny slice-of-life thing, which usually involves Ezra and the tape recorder.
Yeah, I liked that bit. I think I stayed on the boat one of the times, because I remember that, too. Like digging around and recording, like, cats or something.
Yeah.
So it forces you to do it the first time.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking
of.
So
if you choose all boat options, you still get to do it once.
Okay, I think that must have been what happened then.
And then you learn stuff about the people on the boat, rather than the people who leave the boat.
Okay.
Well, and so, like, you go up to, like, one of the chapters you start...
I liked Kate. I did not like Will.
Weird. Will gets some weird humanizing shit on one of the things.
He was just mostly annoying.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm trying to go between places, and he's, like, trying to tell me about shit that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I think I love the boat because it has the weird fucking mammoth on it.
Goddamn mammoth.
I love... Can we talk about the mammoth for, like, just a second?
Hell yeah.
I love that when it's introduced at the end of Act 3...
It's the, like, foghorn.
Well, it's a foghorn, but also, like, that is a real mammoth. And then, like, when Act 4 begins, it's, like... No, yo, it's an animatronic mammoth, because it goes like chunk as it lowers. And it's like, you got me. You got me, cardboard computer. You had me going for a second. I thought there was an elephant.
I there's something about the boat for me that was just like, no, I want to be here. Yeah. And the, and especially the way the boat's presented.
It
when you
feels
walk
like
inside
a,
and the walls, like,
yeah,
all
I,
of that was
the,
so good.
Those transitions are really good. Like, it, and it, it's definitely one of those spaces that, like, very much feels like a home. Like, even though it's not nearly, even though it's a way more cozy space, it has, like, the same warmth as, like, the way Steve Zissou talks about his boat.
Well, it's the same fucking shot.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Like,
so, one of the sequences on the boat is you're Ezra in the wheelhouse, and you're hanging out, just doing your thing with the tape recorder, and then Lady comes up and is like, hey, that's not supposed to be there yet. Why don't you go downstairs and help fix the map? And there's this whole thing about, we rewrite the map because the obstacles change on the river.
Right.
And so you go down into the hold and you're in the map room and you're talking with Will, weird forgetful guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, all of these are old maps. Do you want one?
Well, oh, that's the thing about Will. He's not forgetful. Other people forget him. He's forgettable.
No, he's forgetful too on purpose. It's a thing.
Okay.
But he's, like, writing down the map. He's like, okay, so where was the thing? Blah, blah, blah. Every time you interact with Will inside the boat, after that first time where you're talking to him on the outside of the boat, you're always giving him instructions. Constantly. Like, whether it's, this goes on the map here now, whether it's, this is what you put in the food, you're helping him remember.
Okay.
Because, and he goes into this whole thing about, he has one of Ida's recipes, Ida has secret ingredients, she said I had to forget. I had to teach myself how to forget, and now I have to call her to temporarily remember whenever I cook food.
Okay.
And so, like, he's this whole weird, like the reason they work together on the boat...
That makes his message machine make a lot more sense.
Right. So the reason he is the way he is because he's done these things to satisfy these other people, now he needs these people.
That's why there's, like, tape recorders on the boat.
Yeah.
Right?
So there's, like, and so the message the machine... Tapes. The message machine is 23 messages. You can listen to all of them. Some of them are super long, and they're just inane shit.
Yeah.
Right? And at the time, I wrote the note here. Will's message is, what the fuck? So it's just a bunch of inane shit.
Right.
And when he's called on it, like, hey, man, what were you listening to? He goes, just messages. Were any of them important? All of them.
Right.
Right, and
because,
that comment makes more sense.
Because this is his,
now.
Like, weird memento shit of the way he holds on to things.
All
right,
cool.
One of my favorite pieces on the boat is literally just the two dogs looking at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then the scene cuts away.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, but the thing about the boat is, like, you're Ezra most of the time, and you're recording sounds, and you're dealing with all the other people and their shit in this way that's, like, Ezra realizes he has agency in these moments, and then by the time you get to the concert, he realizes, like, this is a thing I can do.
Right. And then he adds sounds to the concert.
And he adds sounds to the concert, and like, I had him decide, like, hey, this is cool, I want to keep doing this,
right?
So
that's when Junebug and Johnny are like, hey, can we teach him to play the drum machine and
right.
with us? Yeah,
right.
That made more sense.
Right.
So,
and so that's why I say, like, he's the one who's finding something.
With Ezra, they also, like, really, they capture the experience that, like, everyone's had as a child, where adults around you talk in a way where it's like, it's not that you're totally not there, but that, like, you are not a player at the table in the conversation.
You are not in the conversation,
and then
you're at the conversation.
And then those moments towards the end with him are him being that
thing.
Yeah,
totally,
right?
Totally.
He ascends to adulthood,
he ascends
to personhood.
But, like, they captured that feeling of being a child around adults in a way.
And then giving him a tape recorder, and, like, the things that are sort of this weird thing behind that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the rum colony.
Okay, sure.
Drowning in old shit is the note that I have here.
Remember the rum colony, that's like the luau thing?
That's the luau with the lap guitar. I really, really enjoyed the tip sequence with Johnny. Where he goes, go around to the tip jar. And he makes little editorial comments to himself about how much each person puts in. So, like, Shannon puts in $5 and he's like, she didn't need to do that.
Right? Like, he's judging your tip?
Yeah. So, like, one guy, he's like, he's pretending not to see me. Fuck this guy.
Yeah.
Right? And he goes over to Conway and he's like, nah, he's cool.
By the
he
way,
need, like, I yeah, yeah. Bother him.
Can we discuss how the robots are the most human?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's very explicit. Like, they're the most people.
Definitely.
Well, they're, like, the only, they're the only adults who are, like, young.
They're and also the only ones who aren't preoccupied.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
Because they're just all up for the ride.
They're just doing
it. They're just trying to get specific. They're trying to make themselves.
Yeah.
But the guitar player, Siron, Serrano, or something like that.
Serrano.
He said a thing. It said, you know, he was talking about, like, you don't want, like, it's really hard to get them to tip you if they sense any sort of economic precarity. And I really liked that couplet of a phrase, like, economic precarity. That's a good, and you're saying, like, it's really hard to get them to tip if they think you need it, right? Like, if they think you need the money, it's way harder to get the audience to actually pay you.
They don't tip desperate people.
And then that was when Conway jumped off the barge into the water and, like, walked through the water away and it freaked me out. I have a note about it.
Is that before or after the bats?
Before.
Okay. Yeah, because, like, the bats is, like, the very... It's, like, the fish and chip place.
Well, you go through the bats, and then you go to the phone station.
The phone company.
And then he gets taken.
More decaying infrastructure.
And then he gets taken slash goes with them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he just goes with them.
And then the mushroom scene was cool. I liked the double narrative thing that they did there.
I don't remember the mushroom scene very well.
So the mushroom is playthrough, Clara... Yeah. And Ezra on a tiny little island.
Yeah, I remember that.
That appears man-made and cultivated in a way that's sort of unsettling. And there's mushrooms all over it.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I sort of took that, the fact that it's, man-made and cultivated. Mm. I kind of took that, especially later when you see them, to mean that the distillery boys are doing this.
Right.
Like this is them cultivating their crop to make their hooch.
Sure. There's a cool thing where you have the external and internal monologues of both characters separated into two different windows, mm-hmm. and you can advance them separately.
That sounds cool.
It was super fun. I don't really know how to describe it, but it felt cool to do.
I guess something we haven't talked about at all is how often, there's a lot of multiple choice dialogue in this game, but we barely touched on the fact that, you routinely aren't doing this from the perspective of the character you're controlling.
Oh, yeah, you switch perspectives a lot. Or it'll
jump between characters.
Yeah, yeah. In mid-scene, too. It's not
when you're at
A lot of the time, it'll be multiple options of different people.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, one of the first examples, when you go to the Museum of Habitats or whatever, and the whole time you're watching your characters.
Oh, I loved the security.
And they're narrating it.
From the closed camera, being narrated by people you don't know who they are.
And then you find out it's all the people you're walking up to talk to.
And they're talking about the footage in past tense.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like they're...
Like someone's interviewing them.
I like that scene a lot. And then also the one where you're at the dockyard doing the quizzes.
Yeah.
The memory quizzes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
The weird test chamber stuff.
And then, so after Catboat, it's Abel and Eloise's spot, and everybody's just sort of, coming to grips with what just happened. Like, it's the diner at the end of the road trip. I get it.
Yeah.
Right? I've been there.
Has, a sort of, Last Supper quality to it. Like, in sure. the way it's visually framed.
Right.
Of, the big lacquered table of fish and
of
whatever.
Of fish because of the weird thing that happened. That two different characters Rashomon at you because they explain it differently.
Yeah.
Right.
I really liked the way they explained it differently and how it means two totally different things to both of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she's like, yeah, I did a lot of cooking. And he's like, yo, my whole job's based on that conversation. Yeah.
that event, however it did happen, it's very clear it's the high watermark of their life.
It gave them a purpose after that.
It gave them a purpose after that, and also, they're probably never going to reach it again.
Yeah. I didn't really think about that, but yeah. And then you meet Poppy, and then Conway gets stolen.
Yeah, Poppy's the phone guy.
Oh, okay.
Phone girl.
Oh, well, there's the guy at the desk who shouldn't be working there who is.
Dashiell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, forgotten, not wanted things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's trying to, voltage limit a old-style ringer telephone so that it works on the new system.
But the new system doesn't put out enough voltage and he's trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Also, he was fired and just kept coming back.
Yeah.
He just kept coming back because he needed something to do.
Right.
Old people, right?
I don't remember who Ida is.
Ida is the lady running the diner.
Oh, right. Abel and Eloise are the messenger pigeons who delivered love notes at the...
That set piece, by the way,
cool. Yeah,
is... It's so surreal after everything else, because so much of the Echo is, like, this black and white nothing.
Right, but to have, like, an actually built space.
And then this, like, this weird subway tunnel switch box covered in emeralds with these golden statues.
I fucking
like,
love that you come in with a flashlight and can just, like, shine
around
everywhere.
It's so good. Like, there's this weird catharsis to that scene for me that...
It's also, like, a weirdly out-of-place space, even just, like, in Kentucky in general. It's
It's a very, like, New York space.
It's like the hideout that the Turtles have in Turtles
This spot 2. Looked like the Foot Clan hideout.
No, sorry,
I was just quoting a rap song.
The big golden subway station.
Yeah, and also, like, that scene, like, arguably creates the biggest tragedy in the story we're experiencing. Like, Shannon loses
Conway.
Loses your boy, right?
Yeah. So, I missed a click. When the boys from the distillery are chugging by, they go by Blue, and there's a skull, and there's an arrow. Did anyone click on the skull?
I clicked the skull.
What happened? Did she bark?
No.
Oh, damn. All right.
Did you click the arrow?
I clicked the arrow. Nothing happened.
So, like, I felt like having clicked the skull, I made that decision.
Okay.
So I literally was having this, like, I'm Shannon losing my friend to the monsters, to his demons, to his choices, like, all of those things that we've talked about, and there's literally nothing I can do. Partially because the game isn't letting me, right? Like, like this lack of control that the game has built in now has this huge, like, punching me in the heart thing while I'm doing it. So I get back, and one of the dialogue options, like, oh, what do we do with the truck?
Oh, so one of the things you missed was that in the bats, if you turn off the flashlight, Conway gifts his truck to her.
That I got. So okay. I think I still got those conversations. I think we get them at the same points. They were corresponding to signs that gave me info about the bat place, and then we have those conversation bits in between. So, yes, he gives her the truck. We get back, and there's three dialogue options when they ask you, like, what happened to Conway? And, like, I said, he's gone, right? Like, I'm not gonna give them more than that. That's not how my Shannon's feeling. And then the next option is, so what do we do about the truck and the delivery? And that, like, I had no fucking question. Like, I'm gonna do it. He was my friend.
Right, right.
Sure.
Yep. You know, like you immediately take that on, and everyone else is, like, right there with you when you do that. And it's, like, cool. Like, you know, hero's journey shit. Like, now we're doing it.
Yeah.
Like, thing. We're a crew now.
Yeah. We're literally heading back up to the surface.
Yeah.
Like, we're doing the mono.
Well, and then, like, oh, we can't get the truck up these steps. Everybody get ready to load this shit up. Like, it's this whole thing where it's, like, all right, we're...
I love how somebody suggests to just, like, pulley the truck.
Yeah.
Up. Like, what?
I picked that dialogue and I'm like, could we do something with rope? Well, we could, but not with the truck. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the end of Act 4.
That's the game so far.
We don't have any more.
Act 5, sometime in 2018.
So, does anyone have anything else to say about this game?
Love it.
Yeah. If you're still listening, which, wow, if you're still listening, just...
Yeah.
You should play this game, if you haven't already. And if you have played the game, should...
Play it again.
Play it again.
For sure.
Or, like, send us a tweet about it.
Yeah.
This game creates a narrative with so little.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
Like, start a dialogue with us. We'd love to talk about it more.
Can we give this game some not real game awards?
We definitely are. So,
Because I'm so ready.
But before... We've gotten... Oh, my God. Keenan, high five, Shane boy. Owen, high five, each chapstick.
Yeah.
We got our first piece of feedback from a person we don't personally know.
Oh, yeah. I don't have my phone in front of me. He asked me for a breakdown of the Not Real Game Awards because they're nonsensical. And if you haven't been listening since the beginning, you might not know who these people are or why we think they represent what we think they represent.
So the origin of the Not Real Game Awards is... Ross's game dungeon. He has a
his rating structure at the end of his videos.
He gives awards at the end of his thing, and the awards are individual aesthetics and like things that happen in the game that relate to like playing the game.
Specifically that game.
Specifically,
and
his
experience.
They're all super specific, and I didn't want to be super specific, so what we did was we grabbed people from the video games industry who cultivate an aesthetic or evoke an aesthetic, and so we can be non-specific It's meant to be non-specific.
Not necessarily a visual or auditory aesthetic, yeah. But a general feeling.
Of anything that goes into the
just
game.
Just a feeling. Yes. Right, exactly.
Whether it's the music or the design right. Or yes. Fucking anything.
Turns out, art doesn't have to be fine art to be art.
Oh, it's that person.
Sub-feelings.
The person, his name is Gar Incorporated on Reddit. Shout out to our boy Gar.
What up, Gar?
Number one.
I'm glad you got incorporated.
Number one Gar.
Oh, we found out the name of the listener.
What? Oh, yeah.
The listener.
Yes.
You know, that guy that tells the Dark Brotherhood what to do.
Yeah. So, that's an explanation of what the Not Real Game Awards are, and diving in.
Oh, and so if you don't know who these people are, just go Google.
Yeah, like, Google, they are Google all their, easily Googled.
Google their names.
Their resumes, yeah.
Google. Google.
Also, go check out the older episodes, because we definitely introduced them one at a time. As needed.
Did they really start one by one?
No, yeah. It wasn't. No, because there was
I think
like a
there's
clump.
Like two or three to start with.
There was a clump, yeah. And then we added. No,
there's trickling in.
J.E. Sawyer, Tarn Adams, and Jeff Bezos have all been added, but the rest of them were there from the beginning.
No, because the Nina Freeman one gets added in after the Nina Freeman game.
But the Simon Vicklin, Brandon Chung, Todd Howard, and Jake Solomon were all in there from the beginning.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's what I'm saying.
That's
okay.
The core.
So, Todd Howard, zero.
Zero.
Todd Howard's.
Brandon Chung.
Ooh.
Three.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go four.
Fuck.
Four.
Four.
Yeah, four.
Four.
It's, yeah.
Everything's blocky. Yeah.
Everything's blocky. Everything's fucking weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alright, like, everything's blocky and
like,
weird.
It's
we're there.
Like India as fuck.
Yeah.
Nina Freeman.
Ooh,
three.
Yeah,
there's a lot of feelings that I was not ready for.
I feel very intimate, special feelings that don't necessarily have names, and that's what Nina's all about.
Yeah, or at least our like very narrow perspective of her.
Well, that's the video game aesthetic. Since we played, what was the game that we played? We played Sybil.
She has another game out.
We played Shitty Anime Boy.
Shitty Anime Boy.
She has another game out called Kimmy, I think.
Okay.
I might check it out at some point.
Yeah, let me know.
I might scout it for podcast purposes.
Simon Vicklund. That's the dude. We ran into Simon Vicklund because he made the music for Payday 2, and we played that for many, many hours.
And for me, this award represents, like, really enjoyable bad taste.
Yes. Yeah, it's like, enjoying going to Hot Topic.
It's that guilty pleasure thing.
Enjoying the thing you bought at Hot Topic.
Yeah, I got that.
I
don't think there's any Simon
zero.
Vicklund.
I'm zero on this
can't,
one.
I can't besmirch this game with Simon Vicklund.
J.E. Sawyer. Four.
Ooh, yeah, four.
Four.
Yeah, there's some character shit all over this game.
Well, yeah, and the way it's weaved together. Yeah.
It's real good storytelling.
Yeah, it's some good-ass storytelling.
Jeff Bezos. One, because of the companies that eat your live. That's all I'm saying.
I will agree to a one also because Jeff Bezos is seemingly against infrastructure.
Okay. Americana is crumbling infrastructure.
Yeah, my vote doesn't matter, but I'm all in on both of these reasons.
Your vote always matters, Keenan.
No, it's two against three. In this case, it doesn't matter.
But you can still talk us down, man.
Or I could talk you up, but I don't have any. I just like these reasons. I'm good with it.
Tarn Adams, zero.
Yeah, I'm going to give that a zero.
You're slow on the draw today. Use your Bushido.
I feel like there's a lot of weird tangential things that make it a Tarn Adams 1. In that, like,
okay,
there's
explain
the big
yourself.
Mine themes.
Eh.
There's the, like, really meticulously built everything
but
in
that's
this
not,
game.
But nothing in Dwarf Fortress is meticulously built. It's all proc gen.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess my programmer brain is like, yo, Dwarf Fortress itself is meticulously built, but that's totally different from what
but
I'm talking
about.
But
it's a different way of
No, it's, yeah, it's a separation
like
I wasn't making.
So the meticulousness in this game is all
it's
J.E.
All,
Sawyer.
It's all bespoke, handcrafted.
It's all
like,
Sawyer.
I feel like the closest case I could make to giving this a Tarn Adams is... If Tarn Adams did not exist in real life and I encountered a character like Tarn Adams in the game, I would not bat a fucking eyelid.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is Tarn. He lives in a cave. He makes this game that no one understands.
I mean, this is Tarn.
But a lot of people really like it, but they really don't understand
this
it.
This is that guy who lives in a cave who makes a computer no one understands.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
I'm straight up that dude's in the game.
Yeah.
You know, he made Xanadu.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you have to degauss.
But yeah, no, it's a zero.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I think it's a zero.
Which, by the way, I really like degaussing. I miss it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I thought that was a great button to have, and I hit it way more times than
I
needed to.
Oh, yeah. No, in the skeleton, in the electric skeleton factory, I hit
and they
all
brrrr,
yeah,
everywhere.
Yeah,
and I was
great.
Like, I don't know if this is hurting you or not, but I hope that it does.
Fuck these guys.
Jake Solomon.
That's a zero.
I think it gets a 2 for all the loss.
Mm. But it's like...
I'm in a 1.
I can go with 1.
Decide.
I'll go with a... whatever, I'll give you your 1.
Alright, cool, cool, cool. And then your this is the... Your pound of Solomon. You've... 5.
Alright, good.
So,
Tear drink. Pound of tear drinker.
I'm gonna pound my tear drinker. Ew. Hey, you didn't say this about slapping ham. This is the part where I ask you guys if there is someone else we need to enshrine in the pantheon of not real. You don't have to answer now.
Do we want
to
make one of... I think it's 2 dudes that make this game.
I will ask every single week.
Do we want to crown the... Do we want to put them in the
pantheon? I'm asking you to decide.
Do we need a cardboard computer award?
Yeah, let's just make it the cardboard computer award.
Okay. Because obviously we've talked for a very long time about this game. It meant a lot to us. So.
Yeah. So clearly it gets a 5 out of 5 cardboard computers.
Yeah, and that is the next question. Yeah. How many cardboard computers? Yeah.
Yeah, 5. It is the most cardboard computer it can be.
Yeah. It represents, I think, 100% of their game output.
Damn.
And now...
That's not even a dunk. Like, that's just...
Yeah, no, I mean, whatever.
If it's true, it's just true.
There ain't nothing wrong with that.
So, I do want the world to end, so we do have to end the podcast soon, so,
what... Yeah, it'd be so much simpler.
We do in the denouement.
But what else is in the denouement?
I'm looking at you, so what do you think it is?
Oh! I get to say dumb shit!
So, this is the part of the podcast where Shameboy gets to indulge in one of his other, pastimes.
So, we have talked about the Boys of the Shield multiple times.
Mm-hmm. Name them.
In order of importance.
Is that cop show?
Yes. In order of... Good show. We have one CrossFit Jesus, Seth Rollins.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is this moment for some of our listeners who may not know what it is?
We're getting there. So, Shield Boys are at it.
What is this segment?
It's the
dumbest thing in wrestling.
I said Keenan gets to talk about wrestling.
We're doing the dumbest thing in wrestling.
Keenan gets to talk about these other things that he likes.
So we have Seth Rollins, who's a smarty pants, betrayed his friends, now they're friends again, wrestling. We have Dean Ambrose, who has been hurt for the last 8 months with a, I believe, leg problem, which ties into our moment in a moment. And then there's Roman Reigns, who still thinks he's in the Shield and doesn't know what to do with himself.
Okay.
Moving along. Brock Lesnar, that Clash of Clans looking fucker that we've talked about. Yeah.
Love that joke.
It's the best. I use it constantly. He is still the world champion for WWE doesn't show up to weekly show. Oh, there's like a whole thing going on. He beat up Paul Heyman. It's awesome.
No, I mean the Clash of Clans should...
Oh, they should sue Brock Lesnar for likeness rights. Yes. Yeah.
Brock Lesnar should sue them.
Yes, he should.
Putting him in their game.
That's part of the American mythos, right? Litigiousness.
So Brock Lesnar hasn't been on the show and is champion, and this is problematic in like 8 million ways if you look at wrestling at all. So what they've been doing is Seth Rollins has a lower title on the show, or had for a while, and then Dolph Ziggler came in and took it and has been taunting the shit out of Seth Rollins with his giant Scottish friend Drew McIntyre, who literally looks like Conan the Barbarian in muscular form. Finally, Seth Rollins is tired of his shit and calls his friend out, Dean Ambrose, who's totally crazy. That's his whole character. He's crazy. He's unstable. He's unpredictable.
Sure.
He's really just kind of bland. But Dean Ambrose comes out, and normally he comes out in jeans and a leather jacket and is kind of a wiry dude, and he's kind of twitchy and weird. And Dean Ambrose has been injured for 8 months and apparently just been living in the gym and eating people or something because he came out and is just nothing but upper body muscle in the weirdest, scariest way. And you're like, this dude's gonna eat somebody. And it makes him way creepier and scarier in a good way for his character.
Was that the moment?
That's it. That's all it is. He's like, I got a friend. And then Dean Ambrose came out looking like he's ready to eat a car. And you're like, what the fuck happened to you?
All right. So, before we move on, can I inject a
you can do whatever you segment? Want.
Yeah. There's a thing I forgot to bring up earlier.
What did you forget
to bring up? This will be the stupidest Star Trek timelines moment of the week.
I'm not sure I'm okay with this, but it's happening.
No, this is extremely stupid and good. This is like wrestling level stupid.
Okay. My favorite level.
So they put new character in timelines, which they do like on the reg. Mm. people in the forums and in the community have been asking forever and ever for this character named Yelgren, who's an alien, and he's part of the Dominion. But the part that's interesting about him is in Deep Space Nine, when this character appears in one episode, he's played by none other than Iggy Pop. And people have been like, bring us Iggy Pop.
Bring us what they want.
And bring us the Iggy pudding.
To like put a character from Star Trek in the phone game, they have to contact the actor.
Gotta get the likeness.
So apparently they did it. So here's the funny part. So the alien race he's a part of, the Vorta, they are genetically engineered middlemen who have no sense of aesthetics. They don't understand art.
Thus
they don't
appreciate
it. They can't make it.
But it's Iggy Pop.
Hold on. All the characters in timelines have traits like undercover operative or villain or brutal and things like that. Iggy Pop's character, Yelgren, has the musician trait.
Even though his race.
Yeah, like, cannot understand or, like, make music.
This is wonderful. Like,
so, do you ever watch...
I bet that's like an Iggy Pop contract thing. No, I have to be a musician.
I bet it's the developers. Yeah, I think it's the developers.
That smells like a developer's thing. Yeah, so for me, it's like I imagine like human music from Rick and Morty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like, sure.
Dirt, 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 dirt. Dirt, 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 dirt.
Human music. Like, do you remember that there's like that scene in Deep Space Nine where Wayne's like looking at a painting? And he's like, is this painting good? And the guy next to him's like, what? And he's like, is
it... Oh, I love it. He's asking an objective question about art.
Like, is it good? My people don't get this. Like, would it be better if it was bigger? Like, or like, what if it was blue?
Man, that had to be fun to write.
Oh, yeah. That's killer.
It's Jeffrey Combs.
That's great.
That's killer.
Yeah.
All right, so, Owen, how excited are you for Flotilla 2?
Oh, yeah, Flotilla 2 comes out on Friday, and I'm not doing anything on Friday, so I'm going to be home booting up my VR headset for the first time in, like, forever.
You're not doing anything on Friday but playing Flotilla 2!
Yeah.
That's going to be a fun time for you.
Also, I might boot up House of the Dying Sun again. The other day, I got the hankering to, like, experience that game. So I watched an 8-minute video of someone beating the last level of that game. And normally when I watch someone else play a video of someone else playing a video game, I can't, like, put myself into it.
Were you back in the seat?
But the audio in that game is so immersive and so...
I should probably play that game.
It's so good. Like, there's, like, this part where, like, if you're flying your ship around and your shields go down and you take hits, it sounds like you're in a minivan and someone's throwing fist-sized rocks at it.
Sick.
Like, it is tangible and terrifying.
Matt, I might play that game while you're away.
Well, I definitely think that I'm going to play that game because one of my coworkers has been bringing in his VR and we've been playing it with the kids. And nice. So we've been talking about VR games a lot. So yeah. We're playing D&D to Sunday after that. I'm folding everything up and, yeah, we're going to do some VR stuff. Have some more stuff to talk about next.
Yeah.
Speaking of which... What game are we playing next week? Oh, Matt, it's my pick. We're playing Wolfenstein something.
The New Order.
There we go.
The first one. The first new one.
Yeah. We're playing The New Order, and both these guys are really excited because they get to do the opposite of what they did last time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a binary story choice in that game, and Owen and I are both going to do the thing we didn't do. Which are opposites.
Yeah, we did opposite things, and now we get to do opposites.
They're so excited, and I hate it.
Whatever, that game's dope. I'm excited to play it.
I hate how excited you are, like, around me, because I don't have anything to do with it, and I'm just, like, sitting here,
and you guys are like, Night of the Rock Shut up. Shut up.
Alright, so,
Fuck Nazis.
Yeah, definitely. But then, like, not like that, like, with an ice pick.
Don't reward them, kill them.
So you should get hit.
Owen, where can they find us?
If you want to send us emails, you can contact us at badplaystyle@gmail.com.
Please do that.
If you want to hit us up on Twitter.
Or at badplaystyle.
Please do that.
If you forgot where you got this podcast, it's simplecast.com. Is it badplaystyle.simplecast or is it simplecast.badplaystyle?
I don't know.
I think it's badplaystyle.
We're going to do it simplecast.badplaystyle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
sounds right. Hey, we got plugs.
We got plugs?
We got plugs.
What are we plugging?
So, last week, and for the next 3 weeks, I'm going to be on the Mythgreens podcast.
Cool.
Oh, cool.
We talked about RPG villainy, like how to run it, because one of the things I do when I'm not doing this is I play RPGs, like role-playing games, like pen and paper shit. And I've been doing that for a while, so I have, like, cool, insightful things to say about how to run villains. And both these guys are featured in it, because they're my shitty players. And by shitty, I mean awesome. And then...
He says it with love.
Yeah, and then we talked about our favorite video game characters, which, that's related.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy IX is the best. Send corrections to badplaystyle@gmail.com.
What have you done?
It's Final Fantasy Adventure 2 for the Game Boy.
Final Fantasy IX. He said it on camera right before being handed a $50 bill. And then... then the third one we talked about, playing role-playing games with kids, which is a thing I get to do with my job. And then shout-outs to Daniel Kwan, who sent me on that pathway. There will be a link in the description to all the cool things he does at the Ontario Museum of History. He runs, like, a D&D summer camp program there that has, like, a living campaign and has been going for 30 years, and it's super cool. You should check him out. Those will all be in the description, which I write while on drugs.
Can I make a small plug?
What?
Your boy, who likes that dumb wrestling shit, next show, for 3-2-1 Battle, we are doing a Versus the World show, so people from around the country are coming in. It would be a great entry point for anyone who
You guys are on fucking Twitch, right?
We're on Twitch, at twitch.tv/321battle, and your boy is going to be running the main camera next show.
Oh, that's cool.
So, let's do it.
All right, shut up about everything else. We've done everything important. Now it's time for the best part of the show.
Yes.
Sam Fisher versus
Kentucky Route Zero.
Versus Kentucky Route Zero.
Sam Fisher versus the Zero.
Oh, and this was your game. What does that mean?
That's how we decide.
I've decided that's how we decide.
I'm into it. I think it means Sam Fisher takes the hero's journey and descends into the underworld.
Damn, how's he do?
I don't think he gets out, but I don't think anyone kills him.
Okay.
I think I can argue that Sam Fisher's entire story arc is the hero's journey.
He just gets like existentially stuck somewhere near the bottom.
Like, I think he's like floating on a raft in the Echo.
Yo,
and like nobody will go near him because he just shoots guns.
Yo, Sam Fisher's already existentially stuck, bro. He helped fight the overthrown government and then immediately joined the government.
So here's the thing about Kentucky Route Zero. Is that that metaphors are real.
Yeah.
So if you're stuck in the zero, then you literally don't move.
Uh-huh.
Right? Physically.
Yeah.
Right? So...
And, like, Sam Fisher doesn't move as a person.
Right.
Yeah. He just sits in the dark.
Do we need to say anything else? I don't think so. I think Kentucky Route Zero wins.
Yeah.
Sam is zero for all of them.
Yeah.
He almost won one once.
I mean, that's the thing. Is like, Sam Fisher can kill people, but not concepts.
here's how I see this triangle between us. Ooh. Callbacks.
Yeah.
Is that Owen is very staunchly anti-Sam Fisher winning. Not anti-Sam Fisher.
Yeah.
Anti-Sam Fisher winning. Keenan is very pro-Sam Fisher winning, and I am sort of... I'm the Kennedy.
I think...
Fuck.
No. So what it is for me is that I know Sam's the underdog, and I can't help it. Like, that's all it is.
Because the underdog is American...
I'm a short man who lives in America. The underdog is mine!
Yeah, is Sam Fisher crumbling infrastructure?
Yeah, he
absolutely.
Is. Absolutely. Fives?
Yeah, fives?
All right, well...
And he didn't get to kill the bad guy in the last one.
Okay.
He's crumbling infrastructure.
So, oh my god. A special thank you to anyone who got this far.
It's so long.
I'll give you $10. Yeah.
If you tell us you finished this episode, free game code. We got those.
Yeah.
We got free game codes.
Yeah, you will get a game code.
Yeah, send it in. We'll give it to you.
We'll pull one out of the spreadsheet.
Pull it out of the spreadsheet and send it to you. But it's been real. You should play this game. Sam Fisher always loses, and
Wolfenstein later.
Good.
Music is made by my good friend Benjamin Busey. You can find his SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/basicbenji206.